U.S. Senator Ron Johnson is with us in this half hour to weigh in on some of the top issues facing the country, including what the U.S. should do about Russian troops moving into the Ukraine. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, March the 4th. Senator Johnson is also upset with some recent comments made by Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid about Obamacare horror stories. Reid says they are largely untrue. Senator Johnson says Reid is calling Wisconsinites liars. We'll welcome your questions on these issues and any others at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Senator Ron Johnson is a Republican from Oshkosh. He is a member of several Senate committees, including the Foreign Relations and Budget Committees. Good morning, Senator Johnson. Thank you so much for being with us.
Joy, how are you doing?
Good. Let me ask you first to respond to President Obama's comments yesterday about Russian troops in Ukraine and what the U.S. is planning on doing about this. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
We are examining a whole series of steps, economic, diplomatic, that will isolate Russia and will have a negative impact on Russia's economy and its status in the world.
So, Senator Johnson, what else can the U.S. do?
Well, as is frequently the case, President Obama and members of his administration say the right things, and they talk tough, and the proof will really be in the implementation, if we actually do take the types of actions we should take against Russia to start isolating them in the world community, start implementing economic sanctions, not only in terms of the financial situation in Russia itself, but in terms of individuals in the Russian government, restrict their areas of travel in the world, potentially pull visas, maybe even asset freezes. This is very serious business. What Russia not only has done in Georgia, but now in the Crimea and in Ukraine, we need to make sure that Russia goes no further. And I think the Crimea situation is pretty much fait accompli. It's pretty well over. Russia has invaded that section of Ukraine. We need to make sure that Russia understands that they can go no further and that there, you know, actually will be serious consequences that the administration talks about, but unfortunately never acts upon.
Well, in the news this morning, Russian President Vladimir Putin is claiming that the troops occupying Crimea are not Russian troops. Rather, he says they are local self-defense forces, and Russian troops near Ukraine have been ordered back to their bases. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think former Defense Secretary Robert Gates looked into Putin's eyes and saw a cold stone killer, something along those lines. I just have no faith whatsoever in Vladimir Putin. I think he's just absolutely lying. All the justification for moving into Crimea was based on total fabrications, total lies. So it's unfortunate that we have the leader of a pretty important country in the world, Russia, that is so blatant in terms of his falsehoods.
Yeah. Well, why, Senator Johnson, is this situation so serious? Why is this something that the U.S. needs to do anything about?
Yeah, you have a ring of countries around Russia, part of the former Soviet Union, and these are people that are trying to establish functioning democracies, and trying to do that is not easy, particularly when you're trying to come out of a culture of communism where there's an awful lot of there's a culture of corruption. And it's just been very difficult, whether it's Baltic states, Estonia, Lithuania, whether it's Georgia, whether it's Ukraine. And the types of pressure that Russia has been putting on those fledgling democracies has made the task all that much more difficult. And so at a moment when there's so much turmoil in Ukraine, but I think we have to take a look at the actions of the protesters who've taken over that government. They largely left the parliament in place. the supporters of the former Yanukovych basically switched sides after Yanukovych ordered, probably at the behest of the Vladimir Putin, snipers, cold-blooded fashion, killing Ukrainians. They switched sides. So again, from our standpoint, democracy, freedom is good for the world. When freedom and democracy is receding, when it's put under pressure by a government, a corrupt government like Russia, that's a very bad thing for world peace and world security and economic security.
Senator John McCain had some harsh words for President Obama over this situation. He blamed the invasion on Obama's feckless foreign policy. Do you blame President Obama's foreign policy for Russia invading the Ukraine?
Yeah, John, I sure would like to think that politics could end at the water's edge. That the United States, particularly in a moment like this, we can speak with a unified voice. It's certainly what I've been trying to do on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It's what I think we ought to do is be supportive. But I can't disagree with what Senator McCain is saying in terms of the lack of leadership. Our withdrawal from the world has certainly emboldened dictators, people like Vladimir Putin, and the government of Iran to push further and further and basically ignore America and America's warnings. So the fact that we are economically weak, the fact that we've shown weakness in the world, that President Obama has drawn red lines to places like Syria and not backed those things up, is very worrisome. And again, it's not good for world peace and economic security.
Are you optimistic that this conflict can be resolved?
I would say I'm not particularly optimistic. I'm highly concerned because this is not something new. Vladimir Putin has basically said that the collapse of the Soviet Union is the greatest tragedy. I can't remember his exact words, but he's trying to reconstitute the Soviet Union. And so he has been putting pressure on these fledgling democracies for years, destabilizing them, trying to get them back into the sphere of influence of Russia, if not basically, invade them like he's done in Georgia, and now he's done in the Crimea. So this is not a good sign, and that is why it's extremely important for America now. It's just to talk tough, but actually implement some very tough economic sanctions against Russia so that Russia realizes they can't continue to do this with impunity, that their standing in the world will definitely be diminished, that they will suffer, some serious financial consequences for these lawless actions.
We are talking with Senator Ron Johnson, and we are welcoming your questions for him. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Senator Johnson now weighing in on the situation with Russia and its troops in Crimea and the Ukraine. We'll talk about health care issues and budget issues as well. Annette on Facebook asks, Senator Johnson, could you please explain the bill for the military that was rejected last week? Why are the Republicans being blamed for failing our veterans? Can this bill still pass?
Well, the problem we're having in so many pieces of legislation is, even though the Democrats in the Senate and President Obama agreed to budget caps, budget limitations, no sooner do they sign those two pieces of legislation that establish some measure of fiscal discipline, but the next piece of legislation they trot out on the floor violates those exact same budget agreements. And that was certainly the case with this veterans bill. The CBO score, which is, I'm an accountant, and it's very difficult to follow exactly how the Congressional Office scores these pieces of legislation, but, this piece of legislation was violated on what we call a budget point of order because it exceeded those budget caps. And there was even greater smoke and mirrors in terms of how this entire thing was scored. So in general, this bill would have spent about $18 billion, I think, more than anything was agreed to in budget caps. So that's certainly why it was defeated on the floor of the Senate. There are a number of provisions in there I think would actually gain passage if the spending on those items would actually be what we call paid for by lower priority spending items, which is what you have to do in terms of prioritizing spending and trying to live within a budget.
So will that bill ever come back? Will veterans' benefits be restored?
Well, first of all, veterans' benefits are in place, and there is plenty of spending on veterans' benefits. This is just a standalone bill and trying to do additional things for veterans, which I think there's almost 100% support to make sure that we honor promises to those finest among us that have stepped up to play defend our freedom. So this wasn't about defeating spending for all veterans' benefits. This was just an add-on bill trying to address a couple specific problems we're having, certainly in veteran administration hospitals. One of the problems with this bill is it would have overwhelmed the current VA hospital system by making every past veteran eligible for the benefits, which was a real problem in the bill itself.
We'll take a short break, and then we'll take more of your questions for Senator Ron Johnson, Republican U.S. Senator from Oshkosh, a member of the Foreign Relations and Budget Committees, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Senator Ron Johnson for the next 10 minutes or so. Coming up after 7:30, we will welcome in Ron Kind, a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, and we'll get his take on these issues facing the country. Wanted to talk with Senator Johnson about some recent comments made by Senator Harry Reid about Obamacare horror stories. Let's take a listen to Harry Reid on the Senate floor recently.
There's plenty of horror stories being told. All of them are untrue, but they're being told all over America. The leukemia patient whose insurance policy was canceled would die without her medication. Mr. President, that's an ad being paid for by two billionaire brothers. It's absolutely false.
Of course, he's referring to the Koch brothers, saying that they're funding the ads and they're false. He did step back from those comments when asked, and I think he said most of them are largely untrue, the ads that are being run. Senator Johnson, you didn't take too kindly to those comments.
Well, Senator Harry Reid did try to walk back the statement, but his statement was a pretty blanket indictment, certainly against the hundreds of letters I've received in my office and collectively in the Congress. We received thousands of letters from real Americans being damaged because of Obamacare. For example, just last night I was texted by the husband and wife of a couple that both suffered from cancer, got dumped off of the high-risk pool, had to seek coverage through the Affordable Care Act, and their premiums are doubling. Prior to this, the MRI that his wife would have qualified for under their old plan was not covered. They had to shell out $800 for this MRI. Her cancer is now spread to her brain. These are real people with real harm, real damage being caused by Obamacare. And for Harry Reid to, in effect, call those Wisconsinites, those Americans, liars is obnoxious, it's offensive, it's a real insult. And Harry Reid should have not just walked the statement back, he should have gone to the floor of the Senate and genuinely apologized to the Americans he insulted.
Yeah, but the Koch brothers are funding ads that are saying Obamacare is bad and people are worse off because of it.
Well, is that a justification for the majority leader of the United States Senate to go on the floor and accuse Wisconsinites and Americans of lying about the harm being caused by a law that he supported? There's no justification there whatsoever. There's all kinds of groups that have the First Amendment freedom, the First Amendment right to free speech, to run ads against people. I have them run against me all the time. That's Americans' right to do that. It is not Harry Reid's right to call Americans liars and do it with impunity. He should apologize for it.
Yeah, some media stories, though, say that at least some stories they've checked into were untrue. So some are untrue?
They may be, but there are millions of Americans lost their health care plans that they liked, contrary to President Obama's repeated promises. Millions. I think the latest count is somewhere between 5 and 6 million Americans. Again, we are getting heart-wrenching emails and letters from Wisconsinites that are having to make heart-wrenching decisions. For example, quitting a job they love because their premiums have increased to such extent they've got to get their income level down so they can qualify for subsidies so they can afford health insurance. These are real situations that real Americans are being put into because of Obamacare, and there are thousands of them, if not millions. And again, for Harry Reid to basically call all those Americans liars is truly obnoxious.
Peter in Chippewa Falls is with us. Hello, Peter.
Good morning. My question is, you're saying that Obamacare is so bad. In the small business that I work for, it has decreased our premiums by considerable amount, from approximately $1,100 a month to $800 a month. And also, my deductible has gone from $6,000 down to $2,500. Now, what's bad about that?
Well, Peter, thanks for the question. I'm not denying that some people will be advantaged by Obamacare. But the reason some individuals will be advantaged by it is because other Americans are subsidizing either those premium rates, either young people subsidizing lower premiums for elderly people, or literally an increased debt burden on ourselves, our kids and grandkids. So none of this is free, but what we are certainly witnessing, and what is certainly true, is that there are millions of Americans that are also being harmed by it. So yeah, there's some pluses, there are minuses. From my standpoint, the minuses far outweigh the pluses of a health care law.
So let's move on to some other issues. Polls show that the majority of people want the minimum wage raised to $10.10 an hour, but you say it'll be a jobs killer and that it shouldn't be raised. Talk more about that.
Well, I'm not the only one that says that. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office came out with a report and basically said the same thing, that up to a million Americans would lose their job. And that's very harmful. There's a far better way of because every American wants to see somebody who's working full time, particularly head of the household, be able to make a livable wage. That's really what the earned income tax credit is for. And if we could just attack all the improper payments, there was an Inspector General's report on the earned income tax credit that said that 21%, at least 21% of all earned income tax credit payments were made improperly. If we could address that problem, eliminate that fraud in the program, we could beef up the earned income tax credit, which would be a far better way of addressing a livable wage for particularly heads of households that might be at the minimum wage. But the problem is increasing, you know, having the government dictate a market price like that is you definitely will reduce the entry-level positions that are available to particularly young workers, you know, getting that first rung on the economic ladder. I think that'd be very harmful. So increasing the minimum wage has some real negative unintended consequences that is the reason I just wouldn't support it.
The CEO of Culver's, the Wisconsin-based fast food franchise, says that he thinks having a two-tiered minimum wage would be good, one for teenagers and one for adults, and seemed to be supportive of that. What's your reaction to that?
I'd say that's, you know, maybe not a bad idea, because I think you have more than 50% of everybody on the minimum wage is, you know, our younger workers. I think for sure, I can't remember the exact age range, but I think it's somewhere between 16 and 24. And so many of them are actually living in a house with their parents, and so they're really not affected in terms of, you know, having to have a livable wage to support a household. So this percentage of people that are trying to actually support a household on the minimum wage is a pretty small fraction. And again, it's far better to help those folks, though, with an earned income tax credit. And nobody's really talking about splitting out the, other than, you know, Mr. Culver, but in Congress, I'm not seeing any proposals to actually split that out. A far better way of actually boosting wages is to have a far more robust economy And the way you do that is you have to make sure that America is a more attractive place for business investment, expansion, job creation. And that's what is not happening from the federal government. We're making it very difficult for businesses to invest and to expand and create jobs.
We only have about a minute or so before we have to let you go. President Obama is expected to propose in his 2015 budget a $1 billion fund to help communities prepare for climate change. What do you think of that?
Not much. Again, we are spending an awful lot of money on the federal government that we don't have the tax revenue covering. And, you know, from my standpoint, I think this is just money that would, by and large, be wasted. It'd probably be allocated in a very political manner, so I wouldn't support it at all.
And we just have about 30 seconds with you, Senator Johnson. Anything else you're working on right now?
Well, certainly what I do when I go around the state is I do my PowerPoint presentation trying to inform as many Wisconsinites and as many Americans as possible about the severe fiscal challenges we're facing, which, you know, quite honestly, this president is not addressing. He's pretty well given it up on really seeking some common ground in terms of addressing our 30-year demographic problem, which, according to CBO and their alternate fiscal scenario, could produce deficits as high as $127
trillion.
$127 trillion over the next 30 years.
Senator Johnson, I'm sorry that we ran out of time, but thank you so much for being with us. I saw that presentation at the Madison Rotary Club, by the way. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We just heard from Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson about the U.S. response to Russia and troops in the Ukraine, the Obamacare debate he is having with Senator Harry Reid, and other issues being discussed in our nation's capital. Now we will talk with Democratic U.S. Representative Ron Kind about these issues and any others you would like to present at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio at 7:37 on this Tuesday, March 4th. Ron Kind is a U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, which covers parts of western and southwestern Wisconsin. He sits on the House Ways and Means Committee. Good morning, Congressman Kind. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Joy. Glad to be with you.
Well, let's start with the situation in Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin is saying that the troops that were on the border with Ukraine have been called back, but he also says that there are no Russian troops occupying Crimea, that those are local self-defense troops. What's your analysis of what's going on there?
Well, you know, they're Russian soldiers in Russian uniforms with Russian military equipment. So I think President Putin's credibility is on pretty thin ice there. But, you know, this is just a classic 20th century Cold War power play in the 21st century. And what's tragic is not only the impact it's having on the people in Crimea, Ukraine, but this comes on the heels of a very successful Olympics in Sochi where Russia was trying to present themselves as a responsible member of the international community. And for them to so closely to the Olympics pull something like this, I think really sets back the cause. And, you know, we're going to be in Washington this week getting briefings on what options that we face now. There'll be the obvious check-the-box items, canceling the G8 summit that was going to be held in Sochi later this year, you know, visa restrictions, perhaps asset freezing, economic sanctions. I would not, however, expect nor would I support any direct military intervention with U.S. troops. This doesn't present a clear, imminent threat to the national security interests of the United States, but there are steps that we, along with the rest of the international community, can take to isolate Putin and Russia to make this as difficult and as painful as possible.
Let's take a listen to Senator John McCain, in essence, saying this is because of the administration's foreign policy.
There's a broad array of options that we have. Why do we care? Because this is the ultimate result of a feckless foreign policy where nobody believes in America's strength anymore.
And Senator Johnson said he agreed with Senator McCain in that, you know, that in part it's because President Obama is withdrawing from the world when we still have threats like President Vladimir Putin. What's your response to that?
Well, I'm glad we have a Senator McCain and not a President McCain, because if it was President McCain, we'd have troops on the ground in Libya today. We'd have troops on the ground in Syria today. We'd probably have military flyovers over Crimea today. I'm glad the president's taking a very measured, very deliberative approach to this, working with the international community, looking at the options to isolate Russia. If we go down the route of economic sanctions, it can't just be U.S. alone. It's got to be the rest of the world to isolate Russia in that regard. And it can get painful very fast against Russia. So I know Senator McCain loves to rattle the sabers, get everyone fired up with this. But after two long wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and multiple deployments, the last thing we need is for a toe-to-toe military confrontation with Russia over a place like Crimea.
Are you optimistic that that this situation can, you know, can be resolved peacefully?
Well, you know, President Putin just had a press conference with a lot of mixed messages in it. You know, we're trying to decipher that right now. He was saying it's, you know, Russia's right to go in and protect Russian citizens, but he also said that it's the Ukrainian people's right for self-determination. So he's leaving the door open in a variety of measures, and I think the next 24 to 48 hours will be crucial. I hope he doesn't expand the military reach into Ukraine. I hope he does pull back in response to the international condemnation that he is receiving right now. There are many forces within Russia who want to be more integrated and more responsible in the global community. They know this does not help their cause. The last thing they as a country can afford is to be economically isolated from the rest of the world, and that's what he's really risking by doing all of this.
Bernie in Elkhorn is with us. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. Yesterday on Democracy Now!, I heard an interview with Ray McGovern, who spent decades with the CIA, was a senior analyst, specialized in Russia, gave briefings to the first President Bush. And he said that there are implications here about NATO trying to get Ukraine into NATO eventually and put NATO right on Russia's border, which is the United States going back on promises made when the Soviet Union dissolved, and that there is an aspect of this that isn't being discussed. And Ray McGovern's thought was that President Obama doesn't seem to understand this, and certainly people like John McCain don't. And I'm very concerned that isn't being talked about in our media. And given that our country has illegally invaded and occupied Iraq, I have serious doubts about our media and our Congress and our executive branch being, you know, fit to tell other people what to do on their own borders.
What do you know about Ukraine and NATO and going back on promises?
Well, Joy, to my knowledge, there's been no discussions about Ukraine joining NATO. Obviously, Ukraine wants into the European Union, the economic marketplace. In fact, that's why you had that revolution in Ukraine. It was President Yanukovych rejecting the treaty with the EU. But I also know Russia has been very sensitive to the creep eastward of NATO expansion, whether it was the Baltic states and now possibly through Central Europe. So I think going forward, we have to be sensitive to that security concern that they have. But I'm not aware of any discussions at all about having Ukraine ultimately join the NATO alliance. I can understand why they'd want to, given Putin's reaction now in sending troops into Crimea for further protection. But I think there is some merit to the Russian sensibilities to this.
We will welcome more questions for Ron Kind. He is a U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. Our number is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will talk about some domestic issues now coming up. We'll talk about probably talk a little bit about the budget and minimum wage and whatever else you want to talk about. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 14 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, March 4th. We are talking with Congressman Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, Congressman Kind, I just gave our weather forecast in Wisconsin. Are you in Wisconsin or Washington right now?
Yeah, we're trying to get back to D.C. This morning, but it's a winter that keeps on giving, isn't it?
It is. Well, Washington's really got socked with even more snow than we're getting. But it does bring up a budget item. Do you support President Obama's call to spend $1 billion to help communities get ready for climate change?
Well, I don't want to see the details of what he's proposing, but listen, if we are incapable as a nation to adequately respond to global climate change and try to prevent it, then I think we're going to have to start helping communities prepare for the inevitability of it, especially along the coastal regions right now. But listen, we're already feeling the effects. You see the extreme weather patterns that are taking place. You can't just point to one in isolation and say that is directly attributed to it. But nonetheless, we should not be walking into this blind. There's going to be some pretty dramatic changes occurring in this country, throughout the world, with our lives because of the increased global warming that we've been experiencing. It wouldn't be foolish for us just to sit back and just take it rather than trying to do our best to respond to it.
We also talked with Senator Johnson about the proposal to raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, and he said he does not support this. It's a jobs killer, and he says the CBO agrees with him. You know, 500,000 jobs would be lost if the federal minimum wage was raised. What's your position?
America needs a raise. You know, it's been over 7 years since we've had an adjustment with the minimum wage. If we had merely kept pace of the minimum wage with inflation since 1968, it should be at $10.72 today, not $7.25. And you talk about the income disparity, the growing inequality in this country, and in part, not all of it, but in part, it's because of the stagnant wages that most Americans have experienced over the last couple of decades. If something like this happens, as it has in the past, it's usually phased in to blunt the effect. Usually small businesses get tax relief for any adverse impact that they might find. You know, I was listening in the previous half hour about a tiered wage. Germany does that now. It might be something that we should consider for teenage workers. Obviously, teenage unemployment rate is very high right now. We don't want to make it harder for them to find jobs. But, you know, we have a lack of demand in the U.S. economy. When 70% of it is consumer-driven, and if those consumers don't have money to spend in their local communities supporting small businesses, those businesses aren't going to be selling. And if they're not selling, they're certainly not going to be expanding and hiring people. So I think we have to look at the demand side of the economic equation and see what steps can be taken. And an increase in the minimum wage is one thing that we should be serious about.
Senator Johnson thinks that Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid owes Wisconsinites an apology for calling them liars when Senator Reid said that the vast majority of the Obamacare horror stories that you see on various ads are untrue. Was Senator Reid calling Wisconsinites liars, those who have had problems with losing their insurance coverage?
I don't know, Joy. What I do know is, you know, the Affordable Care Act is going to be a political ping pong ball for a while here, and we're going to have to allow it to play out. But this is something else I know, is that the status quo is unsustainable. If we did nothing to try to improve the healthcare system so we get better quality of care at a better price and make sure that all citizens had access to affordable quality care, you know, the old system was taking us to a very bad place of more uninsured, prices skyrocketing year after year, our budget deficits continuing to explode because of rising healthcare costs, our businesses being less competitive globally. So we can continue to have this political fight day after day, or we can try to work with reform, try to understand what is working and what isn't working, and make adjustments and changes along the way. It's the only way changing a system as big and complicated as the healthcare system is ultimately going to work.
Your colleague in the House, Congressman Paul Ryan, said yesterday that America's welfare programs promote poverty and need reforming. Is he right? And are you open to making some tweaks in our welfare programs?
You know, I am completely willing to have a conversation with anyone, from Paul Ryan to Senator Johnson, anyone, about whether programs that go and assist low and needy, low-income families, needy families, are merely creating a culture of dependency. But unless they have a better idea, I don't see what are voting for $40 billion worth of cuts in the food nutrition program is going to help these families who are hungry, and especially the children that depend on it, or financial aid programs for students to go on to school. So we can take a look at the various programs that do exist to see if they are accomplishing their objectives. But I want to see what Paul Ryan is proposing as an alternative that can help lift people up and expand those opportunities for all Americans. And then we'll have something to work on in the future.
I know that you're very very involved in farm bill legislation, but you are not happy with the deal passed by Congress earlier this year. What are your concerns?
Well, I voted against it, unfortunately, because it maintained these huge taxpayer subsidies going to large agribusiness. And now, according to a GAO report, we found hundreds of millions of dollars worth of subsidies going to multi-billionaires in this country. They're not even farming. They're just landowners. That's wrong. This farm bill will also continue $150 million worth of payments to Brazil cotton farmers, which have been going on for the last 4 years because of Congress's unwillingness to reform our own cotton subsidy program. The private crop insurance companies that will be offering crop insurance are guaranteed a 14% profit margin. We're going to pay their entire administrative and operating expense, and they bear very little risk. There's not a business in the world that wouldn't take that offer. So why are we doing it in the farm bill? It, you know, the farm bill is important. Production and agriculture is a very important industry for the state of Wisconsin. It employs more people directly or indirectly than anything else. Our farmers needed the five-year farm bill so they know what to plan and expect for. But we only have one shot at making changes every 5 years, in this case every 7 years, to reform these programs so they're more responsible to family farmers and more responsible to the American taxpayer. And I think it failed the test, and that's why I voted against it.
The Senate rejected a Veterans Affairs bill that would have expanded benefits for former service members and repealed a cut in the military pension for future troops. Senator Johnson explained this was because the Democrats were exceeding spending caps with this proposal. What's your reaction to the Senate rejecting that bill?
Well, it's all stemmed from the budget negotiations earlier this year. And Paul Ryan was insistent that he wanted to see a cut in the pension benefits to retired military personnel. I felt at the time it was a serious mistake. I felt it was only a matter of time before Congress had to go and fix that. It goes back upon the promises we made to our servicemen and women and the pension promises that were made to them. And it's something that should not have been a part of the budget agreement, and it needs to be fixed. Now we're just merely talking about how best to pay for it. I have no problem trying to find offsets in a large federal budget to pay for fixing that problem. And hopefully reasonable minds will sit down and work through this rather than just trying to politicize the issue right now.
Let's take a call from Mark in Richland. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Congressman. We talked last time you were in Richland Center about monetary policy, and I'd like to remind you again about that, that there's no reason why a country needs to say they haven't got any money. If Treasury would simply issue the currency instead of us borrowing our currency into existence, the currency has to go out of existence to stop collecting interest. That's an insane monetary policy, and yet 97% of our money is borrowed into existence, so it has to be taken out of existence just to stop collecting interest. Would you please advocate for monetary reform? A lot of world bankers and central bankers and former IMF bankers are finally advocating that the QE policy should have put that money directly into the hands of the people.
Thanks, Mark. What about that?
Yeah, Mark and I go way back. We had a chance to talk again at a recent listening session in Richland Center. He gave me a nice thick packet that I'm poring over right now with a lot of the things he brought up this morning. And I hope to be able to respond to him. I'm sure I'm going to have more conversations with Mark on monetary and Fed policy as we move forward.
Yeah. Well, what else are you working on right now, Representative Kind?
Well, comprehensive tax reform is long overdue. Chairman Camp in Ways and Means introduced a proposal last week. Now, we've got to simplify this outdated tax code, make it fair, make it more competitive. It's hard for me to explain to small business owners here in Wisconsin why they're paying a higher effective tax rate than most multinational corporations are. And this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity. The code is riddled full of special interest loopholes and tax breaks that the average person back home can't take advantage of, makes it highly inefficient. Just the compliance cost alone is a drag on economic growth. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to continue this conversation of how we can simplify and make a tax code that's fair and more responsive to the needs of the American people.
Mm-hmm. Last year, you said you were not going to run for governor. Have you changed your mind about that?
Well, last weekend, Mary Burke was in La Crosse doing the polar bear plunge in -9 wind chill. So she's out. She's doing a great job and taking one for the team. But I think she has a very strong narrative coming from the business background. She hasn't been involved in those political fights in Madison. The Wisconsin people want a fresh start, one that starts to reconcile the differences that we've had in the state over the last few years. I think Mary Burke is a very strong candidate and with the talents needed for our state.
Seems to me you did not rule out a run against Senator Ron Johnson in 2016. Is that any more or less appealing now?
Well, you know, Joy, these elections start way too early. Mm-hmm. They cost way too much. And I'm sure people aren't even thinking about the fall campaigns this year. And I've got a lot on my plate right now. And obviously with the foreign policy issues overseas and trying to get this economy fully functioning for all Americans, I'm going to stay concentrated on that right now.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Ron Kind, Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, which covers parts of western and southwestern Wisconsin. He sits on the House Ways and Means Committee. In our first half hour, we heard from U.S. Senator Ron Johnson from Oshkosh. Thanks very much to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor and Robin Cherry for on-air production and direction. And thanks to all of you who contributed during our winter membership drive. More than 4,800 listeners pledged, including more than 1,000 sustaining pledges. And we are pleased to welcome more than 1,000 new members to Wisconsin Public Radio. You donated more than $587,000 to fund the Wisconsin Public Radio programs that you depend on. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Very successful winter pledge drive. And we will be thanking you coming up on Your Money. Kevin McKinley will be in. And as promised, because we met our goal, it will be an all questions answered edition of On Your Money as our way of thanking you for exceeding the goal for the pledge drive for On Your Money. So stay with us for that. And I hope you are with us tomorrow at this time. It'll be our big question. We'll pick a big question facing the state or nation and two guests to debate it. That's what we do every Wednesday between 7 and 8. Our big question on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.